Hi, welcome to Extra Time. I'm John Raymond, web editor for sport here at the National. I'm joined today by Paul Radley, our ace rugby writer, who's going to be talking a little bit about regional golf UAE rugby. Thanks for joining me, Paul.
Hey, Tony.
The UAE Premiership, the top flight of domestic rugby here, that starts on Friday, yeah?
Yes. Well, Thursday, actually, because Abu Dhabi Saracens are playing all their home games this season on Thursday evenings, and they host the Exiles on Thursday. But then the next day, yeah, there's the other two matches are on, and they're all good games this weekend.
Give us a kind of a lowdown, I guess, on where the state of the top flight is heading into the season. And obviously, Jebel Ali Dragons have won back-to-back trebles. They haven't really been challenged too significantly in the past couple of years. Is there anything that might change that, or is there anything else worth watching out from the other sides?
Yeah, well, basically the season is set up into three big chunks. Basically, the first bit here is there's five-week UAE Premiership season, which basically each match matters a great deal. It has like great knock-on consequences for further in the season because it's such a brief season. So basically the first match Thursday night, Abu Dhabi Saracens against the Exiles, is a very important game because that was the fixture that last year decided who went into the Gulf top six, which is sort of like the sort of Champions League, I suppose, if you're looking at football, the equivalent, basically the Pan Gulf competition. And the top four teams in the UAE Premiership go into play in that. And for years and years, well, basically since rugby started in the UAE, the Dubai Exiles were always one of the elite clubs. And for a lot of that time, they were the very best club. Yet last year, for the first time, they got knocked out of that sort of established top four by Abu Dhabi Saracens. So that fixture's going to be a pretty important one as to deciding who goes into the Gulf top six this season again. And then the next day, Abu Dhabi Harlequins host Dubai Hurricanes, and they're probably going to be the two teams that are going to challenge Jebel Ali Dragons, if anyone is, this season, because they're the two leading clubs sort of chasing them. The Hurricanes played the Dragons in the UAE Premiership final last year, and then after Christmas, Abu Dhabi Harlequins won every match in the Gulf top six, but then got beaten in the West Asia final by the Dragons. So they've got a few scores to settle with the Dragons because they've lost five of the six major finals in the last 2 years that the Dragons have won. The Harlequins have been the losing team. So they've got some scores to settle this season. And then in the third match, Exodus Wasps, they struggled last year. They finished last. And they're a newish club who are trying to establish themselves on the top level. So that'll be a very tough opener for them against the Dragons, who, as you said, treble winners back-to-back last two seasons. The team everyone needs to beat still.
Right. How did, over the past couple of years, how did they develop that dominance at Jebel Ali? And I guess how have they separated themselves so significantly from the rest of the clubs in the UAE? Obviously, there's no professional element to it really yet. It's an amateur league. So how have they gotten so much better than everyone else?
Well, they have and they haven't, basically. In the years leading up to that, a lot of people would have regarded them as the best team, the best squad in it. Yet whenever it came to finals or sort of decisive matches, the Dragons always used to lose out. Everybody sort of termed them the bridesmaids of UAE rugby because when it got right to the end, they kept messing it up. But for the last two seasons, it just seems to have clicked that they're basically a big match team. They've definitely got the best squad in the country at present, and they have done for the last couple of seasons. And it's just sort of they've married that up with a sort of big game mentality which they didn't have before. In terms of wider planning and things like that for it, there's no obvious answer really, because in actual fact, this season they're going in with their third different captain and third different coach in the space of the past three seasons. Yet whoever's been in charge and whoever's been running the show has just perpetuated that success. And you can see in actual fact, they're getting a little bit stronger this season even, because they're now run by a sort of small group of senior players, absolutely excellent players, Sean Crombie, Hooker, and Murray Strang, who'll probably end up playing fly half for them. They're sort of running the first team. Very knowledgeable, played stacks of really hot. Well, Sean Crombie played hooker for the Scotland Sevens team and played a number of IRB series tournaments. So he's got a wealth of knowledge. And Murray Strang played to a very high level as well. So they could be even stronger this season. And they've got a new captain, Nick Taylor, who was just outstanding last season in his first season with the club. So they're going to be very strong again. One difference to some of the other clubs that they have is the clubs that challenge them, Harlequins and Hurricanes, have got a big sort of corporate club ethos where they've got a masses of cults and minion youth, as they call them, massive sections. Like, they've got huge membership. The Dragons don't actually have that. They're more or less just a senior men's club with a women's side attached to it, and they don't have that feeder system going into it, which actually sort of works in their favour at the moment because they don't have a lot of other worries that detract from sort of the first team, you know, the effort that goes into winning those trophies. And at the moment it's working for them, but I know some of the other clubs have strengthened this season, so they'll be challenging them.
Now, there is a second division, believe it or not, and you actually wrote a feature story about one of the Emiratis on, I believe the team was Arabian Nights, down at that level. So the division itself, in existing, kind of holds some interesting implications for the national team and for the process of Emiratization.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting more, you know, Emiratis involved in club rugby and long-term, especially in the national team, how is that process coming along?
Tricky, basically. Clearly it's not an easy thing to do, otherwise every team would have five Emiratis playing to a really good standard every week.
Right.
The Arabian Nights is an interesting case. In actual fact, the guy, Dumble Mohammed, who played really well for Arabian Nights in their win on Friday, he's played for a few years, 6 or 7 years. There's another guy, Hassan Al-Nubi, who's also there. He's exactly the same. They're close mates. They played together for a long time like that. But they're very sort of in the minority. Not many Emiratis have played for that long or stuck with the game for that long. So in terms of that, the senior player level of Emiratis is, well, it's low in quantity and probably quality, it's fair to say. But the UA Rugby Federation wants to obviously promote Emiratisation, you know, a youth age group level where they can actually, you know, coaches can actually have an impact and a long-term impact. So the UA Rugby Federation have actually signed a partnership agreement with the Arabian Nights to get Emirati players at minion youth level, well, and at senior level actually, to have their, you know, their membership subs every season. Totally underwritten, 80% by the Federation and 20% by the Arabian Nights. The Federation wanted all clubs to follow this. All the other clubs balked at the idea. But last week, the Hurricanes announced that in their academy, their highly successful academy, where they've got lots and lots of players that come through and play, they're going to offer a scholarship scheme. The details of it are a little bit sketchy at the moment, but presumably that means a 100% scholarship where talented young Emiratis who are committed to the process. And that's a very important point that all clubs want to see new players, whatever nationality, they want them to be committed and there every week and putting in just as much of an effort as people who are paying 100% of their own membership fees. So Hurricanes have announced this new scholarship scheme where details, you know, as I said, they're a little bit sketchy at the moment, but basically it's not the scheme proposed by the Federation, it's their own scheme, but you know, 4 and 4 adds up to 8, but so does 5 and 3. So if one set of clubs are doing it one way and another are doing it another, then if they're in competition to see who can get the most Emirati players through, well, that's a good thing for the process at the end of the day anyway, even if people do differ on how it should be done.
Now, this is more broadly speaking, it's something you wrote about and something I actually, during the summer, got to witness a little bit and hang out with the Abu Dhabi Harlequins while they were doing their training. But the level of fitness and the specialized fitness instructors, very high-level fitness instructors that are here and that are working with the rugby clubs, it seems to be kind of a developing thing. Is the level of fitness overall in the UAE right now higher than it's ever been, and more, you know, broadly in the region in general, is there more of a not professionalization, but just an increasing quality in the fitness level of the players and the talent level of the players?
Yeah, I definitely say so. In terms of the fitness, like obviously you saw the video that you shot. People were getting put through their paces, weren't they, at that that training session with the Harlequins? And I think a lot of clubs are committed to that, because in actual fact, I think all six, certainly the UAE Premiership clubs, have got at least one, if not a number, of players who are actively involved and gainfully employed in the fitness industry. I can think of Ollie Turton, who's just joined Exodus Wasps. He's a highly regarded fitness instructor. Dubai Exiles actually signed a three-year sponsorship agreement with one of the leading CrossFit sort of fitness experts over here, Marcus Smith from Inner Fight, who used to play for the club. He's one of the great players from this region. He's actually signed a three-year sponsorship agreement. And, you know, in years gone by, clubs have signed, you know, they basically survive on a shoestring anyway, but and they organise sort of barter arrangements with, I don't know, like the local, say, minibus firm, they can get them deals on whatever. So to have actually signed a deal with a fitness expert and a gym in a fight just goes to show how committed the clubs are and all the players are. In aspect, I think it's a knock-on effect from the CrossFit craze that seems to have swept, you know, well, not just the region, but the CrossFit is massive now. And in actual fact, another set, like the captain and leading player from Abu Dhabi Harlequins last season, Billy Graham, is one of the league's leading players, if not the best player in the league for the last few seasons. He's actually quit the game because he's spending all his time or committing the majority of the time at the moment to setting up a CrossFit gym on Yas Island. And it seems like rugby players are really into this CrossFit craze, and it's sort of knocked on further down sort of the food chain in terms of everybody's picking up bits and pieces in terms of how they can improve their fitness by borrowing from that, and it's definitely having an effect on the fitness levels of the UAE Premiership clubs.
And then just wrapping it up here with you, this is kind of it was presented as a minor development that you kind of noticed is more of a major development. The Dubai is bidding on the Sevens World Cup, the 2018 Sevens World Cup. Just explain to us briefly what goes into that and how that might play into the whole process of both Emiratization and just rugby development in the country in general.
Not sure it will have a massive effect in terms of development or Emiratization, because the Sevens World Cup actually is a bit of an anomaly in the system. Every year you have like a World Series where each of the events is pretty much entrenched on that weekend. Certainly, if you look at the Dubai Sevens, every year it's on National Day weekend, probably the best attended or the best regarded sporting event. It has been here for more than 40 years. And you know, you go to Hong Kong and all the other series events around the world, and they're massively well known, massively well attended. Then every 4 years, this random World Cup, which isn't much different to the series event, and it's a sort of standalone thing. And then by the time 2018 comes around, that'll be 2 years after the first Olympic Sevens, which I'd have thought will mean a lot more to a lot more people than the World Cup will in itself. So basically, the IRB have to pick somewhere if it's going to be a success or have any sort of context at all. They have to pick somewhere where they know Sevens is very popular and crowds will come through the gate, because the last time it was on was, I think, last year in Moscow. There was about 50 people there in the 40,000 or more than 40,000 Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow, and it looked terrible for the sport. So they'd have to have it somewhere where Sevens is very popular, like Wellington, in New Zealand or Hong Kong or here. And if it was here, it'd be absolute guaranteed success, but they'd have to find the right time of year to fit it in. At the moment, they want to play it in August, and obviously it wouldn't be possible to play daytime matches of seven. So definitely UAE could would be a worthy place to stage it. It's just a matter of whether, obviously, the fact they had it there recently anyway, in 2009, whether they'd, you know, offer it to them again, that'd probably be a little bit unlikely.
Well, again, thanks for joining me, Paul. Again, I'm John Raymond, the web editor for sport here at The National. This has been produced by Marwan Alhamadi and the National Multimedia Desk. You can find it on the Sport National Twitter account. That's at SPRT National UAE, or the National Multimedia Twitter account, which is at NSV UAE. Thanks for listening.